They say hope springs eternal, but sometimes it does not. Sometimes the rains stop falling, the wells run dry, and all hope fails. And so we ask, what will work when hope will not?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 577th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Cessnock who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Hello, Michael.
Producer Carol Stafford.
Hello.
And Parmley Taff.
Hello.
Folks, a few thousand years ago, we came to the conclusion that the bounties of nature were simply not sufficient to grant us the life to which we aspired. So, we invented agriculture. With the gray matters of our minds, we conquered nature, produced a surplus of food, and built civilizations. But sometimes, nature fights back with fires, floods, earthquakes, storms, and drought. And sometimes we find ourselves flat on our keister without hope to feed the gray matter of our minds. Consider, for example, the 500,000 Oklahoma farmers who lost their hope when rain stopped falling and winds blew away their soil during the Dust Bowl days of the 1930s. Or how about the 100,000 farm wives who lost their husbands to suicide over the past 14 years in India? Or how about the farmers, our friends, way down under in Australia, many of whom have not seen rain for years? And so today we ask, how do we manage our minds when all hope is gone? Here to help us explore the question, we have from Australia, Brisbane, Rick Collingwood from the Australian Academy of Hypnosis. Rick, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good morning. Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Okay, for our listeners today, we'll have a little bit of delay because we're talking with Rick, who is on the other side of the earth in Australia, in Brisbane. I love that town, Brisbane. Is that where the headquarters of your company is, Rick?
It is indeed, the CD distribution company. I have, basically it's split. I have an academy in Perth in Western Australia, mm-hmm. and a CD distribution center in Brisbane, yeah.
Which is probably good because that's where the people live, right, on the East Coast?
That's the vast majority. Perth is the most isolated city in the world, so it's 3,500 miles from anywhere. It's a little bit like the Wild West.
And indeed the Wild Wild West. Well, tell us a little bit about the Australian Academy of Hypnosis. Who are you and who pays your way?
Okay, I trained hypnosis to doctors, psychologists, and other allied health therapists. I've been doing it now for about 15 years. Most of my work that I do now is sort of pro bono with people that are very ill, and I do a lot of charity work. For example, I'm just to go at the end of next week into northern New South Wales, where they've had severe drought in the Lockhart region for the past 11 years.
11 years. And of course, that's, Rick, that's the reason we kind of tuned in with you. We saw an article where you're working with the farmers of New South Wales to help them cope, I guess, with the fact that running out of hope after no rain for a severe drought for 11 years. And you're using hypnotherapy with them?
I am. What I do is basically it's all by invitation only. They've actually been sent CDs to help them with their depression. Mm-hmm. And to balance their minds out. And now I'll go down. They've been using them for about 6 weeks, and apparently they're a bit more cheery, but I bring them all into a large hall, up to 500 people at a time, and have a mass hypnosis event for them. And look, all that hypnosis can do is help them to relieve some of the stress and the worry and change the frame of mind. It would be wonderful if it could make it rain, but unfortunately it can't. So it's really about helping them work with their depression, using their minds in a positive way instead of being stuck in the frame of it's never going to rain and all is lost. So One thing they do have in their favour in Australia is people tend to group together when times are hard, and the government's been looking after them quite well also, so it has helped them quite a bit, but it still hasn't rained for them, although there has been a little bit in northern Queensland, thank goodness, so the farmers here are starting to see some green shoots pop through the ground at long last.
Hope does spring eternal then, in, at least in Queensland. Tell us a little bit, for those of us who do not know much about Australia. Queensland, of course, is in the far northeast corner of Australia, as it were, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Mm-hmm. Up there.
And the very north of the very north is very tropical with rainforests and what have you, but you come about 200 miles south from the tip, and it just turns into arid desert and small country towns. A lot of it is like a permanent dust bowl, but of course there's selected areas where crops had grown well for years and years, and then one time the rain just stopped, and that was it. It hasn't rained, as I said, for 11 years. So
11 years?
Some of them are, and a lot of the topsoil's blown away.
Mm-hmm. It was indeed much like the Dust Bowl days of the 1930s here in the Midwest then, with no rain in 11 years.
Yeah, just powdered dust, and that was it. Good for crows and cactuses, basically.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of hopelessness that started about 4 years ago. I think people can only hold on for so long, and there's been a lot of suicides, banks repossessing farms, people just walking off the land. The young folk, of course, in the towns now are just abandoning the entire rural way of life and heading for the cities. And it's really fragmented things in all sorts of directions, of parents losing their children, and the hopelessness is rather extraordinary when farms that have been in families for three generations have people just lay down their working tools and walk away, so to speak. It's a terrible thing.
And that's kind of what happened here in the Dust Bowl days of the 1930s. The big dry, as it were, just came, and it just no rain fell, and it just sucked the moisture out of the soil, and the soil just blew away in the wind. And so did the farmers. They just picked up their themselves and moved to the city, as it were. California moved west to California. With respect to that kind of impact, is there anything left to hold communities together when a drought goes on for 11 years?
The Australian people are very, very dogmatic. They're very rural. The rural people are very family orientated, and like I was talking to a lady in Lockhart the other day, and what's happened, the people in the bigger towns nearby, such as Wagga Wagga, where there's 180,000 people, they're making donations and helping out. They send clothing. The government has finally started to give significant financial aid to these farmers. The banks have dropped interest rates basically down to 1% and frozen payments on money owed to them.
So there's so
there
is so much society can do to help out then.
And there is. If people turn their backs, of course, it's complete degradation. But fortunately in Australia, it isn't that way. There's still that Anzac spirit to a degree. And when things get really bad, if it makes the media, there'll be fundraisers and all sorts of things. And everybody pitches in and helps and continues to help. So that's a very positive thing. But another issue that's quite significant is, of course, since they haven't been growing food, a lot of markets have been set up to import the food. So their marketplaces to a degree have eroded, so a lot of them are feeling now, well, even if the rains came and things began to grow again, what are we going to do? We haven't got a marketplace anymore. We're importing our food now. We're not seen as major growers anymore. So it reaches into all corners of the market, all corners of society. It's not something that just will go away because the rain comes, you know?
And so hope is lost.
Yeah, to a great degree, and a lot of people are wondering what they're going to do, even if it rains again and they grow crops. There was a bit of rain came through one part, so what they did was they all went out and the hay, because it had been dry for so long, all the hay sheds caught fire because the hay got wet, so it doesn't seem to matter which way these people go. There's something else that will come up to bite them when there is a bit of hope. So hopefully I can get in there with my associates and do some good work.
Good. And we're going to take a quick break right now, Rick, but when we get back, we'll talk about that. I want to talk about what happens to the individuals when they lose hope. When people lose hope, where do you turn? Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking what happens when you lose hope. Where do you turn? We've got Rick Collingwood on the line from Brisbane, Australia. You as well. How do you manage hope? 831-479-1980 and 800-624-2665. Right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Welcome back, folks. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. You know, we do live on hope. We hope that the rains will fall, the sun will come up, plants will grow. We will be able to grow enough to provide a surplus so that we can go about making money and have a great life. But sometimes nature just does not cooperate. Sometimes the rains do not fall. And they are not falling right now as we speak throughout the South Pacific and Australia, a little bit perhaps in the northern Australia, but not enough to end Australia's big dry, an 11-year drought. Think of it, folks, no rain for 11 years. And when you don't have rain for 11 years, you lose hope and you lose the fabric of your community. And we're talking today about how you manage when hope disappears, what you can do. And we have Rick Collingwood, who is with the Australia Academy of Hypnosis, based in Perth, Australia, which is on the west coast of Australia. But today he's calling in from Brisbane, which is on the east coast. Well, good day, mate. Good to have you aboard, Rick.
Good to be aboard, mate. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. What happens to us when we lose hope?
Well, what happens, the way that we lose hope is, a lot of people don't understand that the human brain doesn't learn how to think. We're born knowing how to think. In the subconscious mind, there's patterns that become set. And the more emotion attached to a pattern, the stronger it sets. Now, we can't have a thought without having a feeling first at some level. So when we have this pattern of hopelessness that gets built on day after day, week after week, year after year, it leaves at a subconscious level an ever-pervading feeling of hopelessness, if you will. And then the whole world and our perception seems to crash down and nothing's ever going to get better. You just feel completely stuck in this dark place inside. And then you get a whole group of people together like that, and you can imagine how that emotion ricochets out through a community and just continues to spread. So basically what we're doing is, when we become sad, depressed, or lose hope, we're just forming a pattern that self-repeats deep at a subconscious level, and until it's shifted by another external event that begins to bring better feelings or hope, that's what is basically vibrating in our minds.
And over the course of time, with this much despair, this much hopelessness, patterns in society emerge, it seems like Here in the United States, during the farm crisis of the 1980s, we lost thousands of farmers to suicides. In India, over the past 14 years, 100,000 suicides in the farm community. Do you see something like that evolving now in Australia, which is in its 11th year of drought?
There are suicides. The media try to keep a lid on it to a great degree. I don't know whether they're doing that out of respect or the knowledge that it can spread.
Can it spread? I mean, when a number of people commit suicide, can it spread? Does it perpetuate itself that way?
It does. We're a bit like lemmings on an emotional level. When one person jumps off the cliff, so to speak, others will begin to follow. As I was saying earlier, though, there is a lot of help here for the farmers. Part of what we're doing is with the New South Wales Health Department, where the drought is very bad, so that there's funding, they're monitored, they have access to counselling. So it's not as if everybody's abandoned and can't eat, but that doesn't mean to say when you're watching three generations of a family farm go up in dust that you don't become embedded in the hopelessness and begin to contemplate suicide, and many indeed follow through with it. But one of the ladies I was talking to was saying the way that the Australians are, especially the rural people and the farmers, is that they're very hard men, if you will. And they don't like to talk about their depression, or they won't say if they feel suicidal. So I think a few of them are basically found with the gun lying beside them, without saying anything to anybody or even letting a glimmer through to anyone else that they're feeling in that frame of mind. So, you know, it's a very terrible and sad thing, but it is definitely happening, Michael, yeah.
And having spent some time in Australia, I know that you folks you're strong. You're weather beaten. You're used to, you know, tough conditions. You're not a weak people by any stretch of the imagination. So that when you see something like this happen, you know that times truly are tough. And so we look for some place to turn where we can get help in these incredibly extraordinary times. And I guess we're all vulnerable to these extraordinary times. I was watching a television piece the other day about a blizzard that struck New York City in the early part of the last century. And it completely shut down everything to the extent that it was hard to get food. And so it's not just farmers that have to go through this periodically, but everybody, you know, is vulnerable to it to one extent or another. So where do we turn when we're in this situation? And when I saw this article about you and hypnotherapy, I became immediately fascinated, Rick, because I was introduced to hypnotherapy in kind of an extraordinary circumstances. I was living on a U.S. Navy aircraft carrier out in the middle of the South China Sea, and the dentist that I was working with, who was working on me, as it were, it was from my own hometown, and we kind of became close. And one day he said to me, "Would you like to learn how to go through all of these dental procedures without any pain medication?" And I looked at him and I thought, "What are you talking about?" And he said, "Well, I would like to teach you how to hypnotize yourself so that you don't have to feel any pain or fear." And so I looked at him and I said, "Well, I'm not doing anything else." "Sure." And he taught me how to hypnotize myself, and I got so that I could go through all kinds of ferociously painful dental procedures without any pain medication. And I could control my mind to the extent that I felt no pain. And then later, after the Navy, I was involved with a meditation group who taught me how to meditate. And that was also an extraordinary situation, because one night I was without sleep, and it was an extraordinarily stressful time. And right in the middle of the night, this wonderful feeling came over me, a feeling of warmth and blessingness. And I just broke out in a big smile, and I fell asleep. And I woke up the next morning, and I took my tests at school, and I aced them. And I was walking through the day like... this wonderful feeling. I had no idea where it came from. And then I met some friends in this meditation group, and they said, did you feel this come in the night last night? And I said, what? And they said, we were meditating, and we experienced your need, so we prayed for you in the middle of the night, and that's where this wonderful feeling came from. So when I saw this note about you working with farmers and using hypnotherapy, I got to thinking, maybe there's something here that we should all be talking about, and that's the reason for our conversation today. So we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I'd like to ask you how you used hypnotherapy to bring hope to people who have no hope. But I'd also like to ask you if there is a difference between hypnosis, meditation, and prayer. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're off kind of on a different track today, but I hope you'll bear with me, because I think it will have a lot of relevance to surviving hard times, as it were. And I guess we're all vulnerable to hard times, and some people have a lot of hard times, like those farmers in Australia who've been living with 11 years of drought. And so the question of the day is, how do you manage your mind in times of great stress? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We're inviting your participation. We have Rick Collingwood from the Australian Academy of Hypnosis with us today. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. They say hope springs eternal, but sometimes it does not. Sometimes the rains stop falling, the wells run dry, the wind picks up and blows all the soil away, and all hope fails. And so today we pause to ask, what will work when hope will not? With us today, we have Rick Collingwood from the Australian Academy of Hypnosis, and he is working with people in the outback of Australia, where it has not rained for 11 years and where hope has indeed dried up. And we're looking for ways of pulling them together and holding them together. And gee, does it ever look like it's going to rain again after it hasn't rained for 11 years, Rick?
It's they've actually had a little bit in northern New South Wales. I was watching the news last night, and there was a little town, I missed the name of it, but it had been completely flooded out. So with this climatic change and these funny wind patterns, this big crowd of rain came over, dumped on a whole town and flooded it. Then everything, it just went fine again and stopped raining. So I think it will, eventually it must. I can't see how it's going to go on for another 11 years, but the trouble is nobody knows when. That's the problem.
So let's approach this, you know, as a farmer out there in the outback, and it hasn't rained for 11 years, and, you know, after maybe 7 years, you held out for 7 years, but it's to the point now where you can't hold out hope anymore that it is going to rain, and you've been without hope for 4 years, and now you're looking for some way of holding yourself together. And to what will work when hope will not? So we look into, we hear Rick Collingwood saying, let me help you with hypnotherapy. I have some experience with this where, by golly, it actually worked, and to the extent that it still works for me today. I can get on an airplane, and I have myself trained to the point where by the time the airplane's wheels leave the ground, I'm asleep. And that's just a technique that I learned from a dentist on an aircraft carrier who taught me how to hypnotize myself. So, first of all, I'd like to know if you think there's a difference between hypnosis, meditation, and prayer.
There's a difference between the three, and as much as hypnosis is a state that you will go down into where you can do something constructive or make an alteration for yourself once you've learned the process. Meditation really is about thought stopping, calming the mind and just bringing yourself into a peaceful state. Prayer has now been measured. There's been a lot of scientific studies done with prayer. It can get a bit new ageous and spooky to many people when the mechanisms are looked at, but there is a certain amount of interconnectedness within all things, because the mind, of course, is electric.
Mm-hmm.
They've done some quite amazing studies on prayer with action at a distance for putting people in Faraday cages many miles apart after they've spoken to each other for a few hours and getting one person to remember a conversation, and then they'll flash a light on and off in their eyes at the same time, and the person who is some distance away, their pupils will begin to expand and contract or dilate at the same time. So there is some evidence that the thoughts do interconnect, and you see this in a mass crowd, how a mass crowd is so easy to manipulate once you put a thought into them and then attach some emotion to it. Unfortunately, in a negative way, Hitler was the best one ever at doing that. He turned one small country against the entire world and gave them a justification for what they're doing. But hypnosis really is an altered state of mind from the beta frequency we operate at normally. We go down into alpha, which is a nice, relaxed, mm-hmm. almost asleep feeling.
That's
that would
step,
be self-hypnosis.
That's step one, right, is the relaxation.
That's correct. And then we go down into a deeper state once again, which is theta. Now, the trick is to use self-hypnosis is to go down into a theta state where you're fully in your right brain then, and also keep your left brain operating so that you can actually put a suggestion into yourself that's going to take effect in your subconscious, which is your hard drive, if you will, and change your pattern. How we do it primarily after a session of in-person hypnosis is, a few years ago I patented a frequency or a combination of frequencies, and they induce this deep theta trance state. So what we've done is recorded it onto CDs, and then there's a hypnotic session as well underlayed with subliminal messages, and we get some phenomenal results with them, with these CDs, very, very quickly. 2 years ago, for example, with medical doctors in Perth, we took 9 to 11 terminal cancer patients, and they were all supposed to have passed away at least a year ago. Out of the 11, 9 are still alive, 7 have no cancer at all, and 1 passed away from a heart attack after going into remission. Hmm. So it's a very, very powerful thing if it's done correctly and if it's understood correctly.
Let me ask you, a quick question with respect to lowering yourself into these states. While I was working with some people, we were practicing our meditation or hypnosis or prayer or whatever you call it together at a location that was right underneath an airport flight pattern. And the airplanes were taking off right over the house, and the whole house would like rattle and shake and vibrate. And I turned to the instructor and I said, gosh, you know, how do you manage to meditate when there's all this racket going? And he said, oh, use it. Take the sound of that powerful aircraft and use it to go deeper and deeper and deeper.
And exactly.
It seemed to work.
Did you find it worked for
it
you?
It worked.
It did work, yes.
It works.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the trick that I use now for whenever I travel, is when the pilot, you know, pushes the throttle forwards and those engines rev up, I just ride that energy into a deep state of relaxation, which is thoroughly disgusting to my wife, who can't sleep on airplanes. And so and so when we take the flight from Sydney to San Francisco or something like that, you know, 17 hours on a plane, you know, I'm gone. You know, but she can't. It's that power of going deep, and using whatever you can to go deep.
Well, I will say to a person in clinic, for example, and I teach my students as well that I train hypnosis, that noise, outside noise, is a disease for the hypnotist, not the person being hypnotized. And if I'm putting somebody into hypnosis, I'll make a suggestion that every outside sound that they hear, and even the ones that they can't hear, will simply help them to let go and to go deeper and deeper. And it's a very, very powerful way of, an effective way of inducing a deep trance state. In a deep trance state, we have access to so much more than what we have in a normal beta state. For example...
Well, hold that thought. Can you hold that thought, Rick? I want to pick it up when we come back from break. Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking about where we go for hope when all else fails, when Mother Nature lets us down. Phone numbers today, if you'd like to talk with Rick Hollingwood from the Australia Academy of Hypnosis, is 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. And we're going to pick up the phones when we come back, so please do stay tuned. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Welcome back out there. Michael Olson here. This is The Food Chain. What's Eating What Radio? And the phone number is today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. You know, with the gray matter of our minds, we conquered nature, produced a surplus of food, and built civilizations. But sometimes nature fights back with fires, floods, earthquakes, storms, and drought. And there is a drought going on in Australia right now, and it is hard to cope with 11 years of no rain. And so today we ask, how do we manage our minds when all hope is gone? We've got Rick Hollingwood from the Australian Academy of Hypnosis with us today. And Rick, we have some phone callers. Should we go to the phones for a few?
Fantastic. Let's go.
Okay. Well, here's Rich. Rich, welcome to the Food Chain. You've got Rick in Brisbane, Australia.
Okay, good morning here. I don't know what time it is there.
It's 3 in the morning in Brisbane.
3 in the morning. Well, good night. My question was a strange one. Can you hypnotize plants and or animals? And how would you know if you're successful? I assume in plants that you'd see them grow. So if you could hypnotize plants to realize they don't need a lot of water, little or no water to grow, is that possible?
I don't know if plants. That's a very interesting question, Rich. Animals, definitely you can, by slowing their brain state down, using frequencies or a low voice tone or a high voice tone. But plants, you've got me there. I don't think they can quite operate on the same level of consciousness.
Well, wait a minute, Rick.
I was going to say, they do respond to music, you know, loud music or soft music like classical. And I think the way that you would notice the results is, are they going to grow?
Yeah, look, there's a very interesting book written by a lady called Lynn McTaggart called The Intention Experiment, where they did studies with plants and hooked them up to electrical devices. And if your plant knew you, it would recognize you, and the way you would speak to it, with the emotion in your voice and what you were feeling, would give off different electrical readings. Even from a distance, if you thought about going home, the electrical reading off the plant would change. So I think if you could do that, it would have to be done on an emotional level. You would need to get a bunch of people together focusing on the intention that they required, that they wanted the plant to feel.
Maybe have you tried it?
Interesting one. Have I tried it? No, I haven't. I haven't tried it at all, no.
Have you tried working with animals?
With animals, I have dogs and cats especially. I've found frequency is what calms them down the best. As I was saying earlier, we have a combination frequency that we call the neurosonic, which is two different pitches combined together and recorded. And people use them themselves in CDs, and I always say that it's quite amazing how their animals, their cats and dogs, will just settle down and go to sleep with them. So frequency will definitely work on an animal. Plants, I think you would need a strong emotional intention. And if you were trying to make them grow in a rural area, and a lot of them, you would need a lot of people to do it. And the trouble, I think, would be that it would be very difficult to get a lot of people to cooperate together to do that. Yeah, but the trouble with a lot of this... Sorry?
Go ahead.
The trouble with a lot of this stuff is it's still seen, although there's massive amounts of scientific evidence if you bother to look, it's still seen as a bit out there and new age-ish. Conventional science tends not to want to look at it too deeply. It's more so the quantum physicists and quantum sciences that are bringing these techniques to the fore. For example, if you go onto Google, you Google medical hypnosis, you'll get 1.8 million research papers on it. So it's very well studied, but very misunderstood.
Okay. Do you gotta have it, Rich?
Well, yeah, the only thing I was thinking is if you could maybe stand on a big podium in front of this field and try it as an experiment with a field of plants just to see what would happen, it would be interesting.
Well, with respect to that, Rick, weren't you talking about how you work with a room full of 500 people?
Yeah, look, you get 500 to 1,000 people together in a room and put them into hypnosis. You can literally see the energy build up, and the 1,000 people is much easier to hypnotize than one person. As soon as one hits the tipping point, if you will, this energy just seems to spread through all of them, and they go down into a deep trance state very, very quickly. It's quite extraordinary to witness, but even more extraordinary to be inducing those states into people. But the thing with all this, it's a natural state we're all capable of if we only realize we were.
I have one more question, then I'll get off. Assuming plants communicate with each other, all you would need to do is to start convincing a few of the plants, and they would start to communicate with the others, wouldn't they?
Which seems to be how people
do
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they do anyway. Maybe if a whole lot of plants get together and they start feeling withered and dry, the rest of them follow, go into that negative framework regardless. So it's a very interesting proposition that you've put forward there, Rich, indeed.
Something to work on.
Thanks for the call, Rich. Appreciate it. Let's talk a little bit then about what you do with hypnosis. Oops, there goes my signal for a break. But when we come back from this break, I'd like to ask you, Rick, how you use hypnosis to bring hope where there is no hope, bring strength where there is no strength, bring courage to where courage has gone. And that, of course, happens periodically, and it happens right now in Australia, where they've been suffering 11 years of drought. It happens in India, where they've 14 years of trouble have resulted in 100,000 suicides. It happened here in the 80s with the farm crisis. How can you use hypnosis to bring strength and courage to those who have none? This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here, 800-624-2665, 831-4790. Right back. Where do you turn when all hope is gone? Well, Rick Collingwood from the Australian Hypnosis Academy, I guess it's the Australian Academy of Hypnosis, suggests that one place to turn is to yourself and with hypnosis. Rick, we have a couple quick questions. One is, how does one hypnotize himself or herself?
It really is a slow relaxation process, just by focusing relaxation from the top of the head slowly down through all the limbs. Mm-hmm. The best way is obviously to go to a hypnotherapist or a hypnotist and be taught how to do it and be given a trigger, such as close your left hand, say a word, and go into a trance state. But there's also ways that one can do it with recordings, CDs, that type of thing. So there are a few options available out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how do we get in touch with you?
If you'd like to find out more about what I do, my website is one of the biggest hypnosis sites in the world. It is mindmotivations.com. On there's a lot of self-hypnosis CDs, a lot of different areas of help for different people, and a lot of information on hypnosis, scientific information, and a little bit of esoteric information as well. So mindmotivations.com is the best way to see my work.
And let's go to those people who need help with finding hope in a world that has become hopeless. What can you bring them through hypnosis, Rick?
You can bring them a fortification of mind at a deeper level. It's really, as I was saying earlier, about setting patterns at a subconscious level. Hypnosis enables one to change those patterns, so they basically dissolve in a similar way that a dream will fade after we awaken in the morning. We can have a terrible dream and feel rotten when we wake up, or have a great dream and feel fantastic, but it usually fades away pretty quickly and is forgotten. That's because the conscious mind won't keep a hold of it where it's been in the subconscious. So we really need to change the patterns that are deeply entrenched in us, to change the way that we feel. And when we keep repetitively doing something or feeling a certain way, it becomes who we are. And the subconscious can be likened to the hard drive of a computer. It has a tremendous amount of information. For example, our conscious mind we're using right now, it could handle 7 things at once maximum. The subconscious has got 70 to 90 trillion cells to look after in the body through 5 nervous systems. And so you can imagine it's doing quadrillions of things every second. So that's where all the intelligence is. We consciously, I think, just like to think we're a bit smarter than we actually are. So until we get down in there, it's very, very difficult to make a change. And the two minds will actually fight against each other. It's like the insomniac lies there, I've got to go to sleep, I've got to go to sleep, I've got to go to sleep. And the subconscious is there going, well, you're not going to sleep because I'm in control here. And it isn't until the conscious thought of stopping it to try and go to sleep takes hold that we will go to sleep. So we can have a contradiction of minds too, but we need to get down into that deep level to make a beneficial effect. And hypnosis, quite frankly, is the best way to do that. Meditation is the second best way. And self-hypnosis obviously is a very good way as well, but there still isn't anything as powerful as going to a good experienced hypnotist, such as the dentist that taught you a self-hypnosis technique many
years
ago. Rick
Collingwood, I want to thank you so much for joining us today from the Australian Academy of Hypnosis. You're in Brisbane, Australia. Also want to wish a quick happy birthday and happy anniversary to my lady Marlene. I love your girl. And I want to thank all you out there for tuning in the Food Chain, brought to you today from Brisbane, Australia, and Rick Collingwood. Rick, thanks for joining us. Great to have you aboard.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me. You take care.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.